You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The NBA moratorium is officially over, and now the fallout begins. To talk about what it means for the Houston Rockets, welcome in to a new episode and a new week here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is brought to you by our friends over at Gallery Furniture, where the Red Hot Summer Sale is now underway. Visit any Houston area Gallery Furniture location or go to galleryfurniture.com to take advantage of all the specials. We're also sponsored by our partners over at Twillery, where if you go to twillery.com/lockedon, you can use the promo code Locked On for $25 off on their complete line of apparel. As we chat this Sunday, July 7th, we're now entering the second week of NBA free agency, and the Rockets are still in search of external upgrades. They did already re-sign Austin Rivers, Daniel House, and Gerald Green, but now they definitely need a backup big to replace Nene, and probably another forward that can play some behind PJ Tucker. Be it by trade or signing a free agent, Daryl Morey is always looking for both the best player and the best value available, and that often takes time since players need to slip through the cracks in order to get that great value. Keep in mind that 2 years ago, we all acknowledged what a great signing that Luke Bamute was, and that didn't happen until the 17th. In this case, though, that's not the only reason for the slow pace. Over the past few days, the free agent market was largely at a standstill waiting on the decision from Kawhi Leonard. Well, now that we know he's going to the LA Clippers, the LA team that did not get Kawhi, that being the Lakers, was able to spend its newfound cap room on Saturday, and now we finally have names like Danny Green, Boogie Cousins, and JaVale McGee all coming off the board. We know the Rockets were interested in at least two of that group, those being Danny Green and JaVale McGee, and now they can move on to their next group of targets. And in addition to Kawhi's decision coming on July 6th, we also had the league's moratorium ending, which allows all of these deals that have been reported over the past week to finally become official, and in the case of trades, such as Anthony Davis, even well beyond that. That's crucial because as it pertains to the trade market now, like say for Andre Iguodala, it's easier for teams to take action on moving players once they formally have their rights. After all, deals do fall apart, just ask DeAndre Jordan, or even Giannis Antetokounmpo, who saw his deal from Houston to Detroit a couple of years ago fall apart over a contested physical. Either way, be it Kawhi's decision or the moratorium ending, we are finally seeing activity pick back up again, so it shouldn't be too much longer until we have a new Rockets signing to discuss. To talk about what they may need, as well as where the Rockets appear to fit within the new landscape of the NBA after Kawhi Leonard and Paul George went to the Clippers, I've got an old friend joining the show for a Sunday roundtable. His name is Roosh Williams, and not only is he an expert on the Rockets and part of our regular panel of guest analysts, but he's also based in Los Angeles. So he's definitely got an up-close and personal view of the Clippers with Kawhi and PG, the Lakers with LeBron and Anthony Davis, and of course trying to figure out how the Rockets stack up against both of those new contenders. Anyway, without further delay, let's hit the phone lines and get Roosh Williams connected right here at Locked On Rockets to start breaking it all down. Roosh, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, man? I'm doing all right.
It's a pretty interesting day. I was going to start you with the LA angle since you're out there, the Clippers with Kawhi and PG, but I'm going to start with the breaking news from Tim McMahon of ESPN saying that the Rockets do have interest in Russell Westbrook if Oklahoma City moves on from him. That would be a natural decision for the Thunder since they've lost Paul George, and with Russ being 30 years old, he's not really a fit there anymore. We know there's a close relationship between Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Nonetheless, with Harden and CP in Houston, it seems a bit of an awkward fit. And McMahon not only says the Rockets are interested, now he does note that it's a long shot pursuit, but he says the Rockets could be interested even if they did not send Chris Paul to the Thunder or anywhere else in the deal. In other words, if they had all three of Harden, CP3, and Westbrook on the roster. Roosh, I know you're just waking up this morning. Your thoughts on this report? Is there any fit at all with Westbrook in Houston?
Wow. So I'll be honest. The last report I had seen was Bleacher Report saying that rival execs said, you know, the Rockets Rockets could be a likely suitor. I didn't know that there was some talk of Chris Paul or of pursuing Russell Westbrook while keeping Chris Paul. That's interesting. My original take was going to be that I do not want Russell Westbrook in Houston at all. Zero chance for me. Some reasons being, I mean, look, we already know, I think we spent a lot of time on Twitter going back and forth arguing about Westbrook versus Harden for their MVP cases. And Twitter likes to crack on Russell Westbrook, and I think a lot of times rightfully so. But the fact of the matter is, four out of the last five seasons, he's averaged 20 or more field goal attempts per game. Four out of the last five seasons, he shot 29% from three on staggering volume for that percentage. His free throw percentage, even over the last two seasons, has dipped into the 70s and then into the 60s, I believe. Even his free throw attempts, I know this past season, and I think recently, have been low, you know, like around four, five, six, seven, for a guy that has the ball in his hands that much. And, you know, I admittedly don't watch Oklahoma City all that often, so I'm drawing some conclusions here. Maybe I'm wrong, but one of the conclusions that I think you can draw from the fact that, you know, his free throw attempts are going down and he does have the ball as much as he has the ball is that he's just not as aggressive as he used to be. And I think that kind of feeds into the main underlying reason that I don't want Russell Westbrook. And that's, he just plays low IQ basketball, in my opinion. And I think for that reason alone, I just don't think that he would really solve any need of ours. I mean, he's not big. He doesn't give you size. I think he's a defensive liability at this point. He really, you know, he plays high energy basketball. He'll do things like chase balls down, maybe get like a weak side steal, maybe take a one-on-one possession very personally and seriously and try to lock someone down like we've seen him do, but usually it's to the detriment of the team. For example, two playoffs ago, you know, when he was getting worked by Ricky Rubio and then took it upon himself to try and shut Ricky Rubio down to the detriment of the team scheme defense. So there are a bunch of reasons that I just don't think Russell Westbrook would be a fit, you know? I mean, we have two guys in Harden and CP3 that need the ball in their hands, that operate with the ball in their hands. I think we've talked a lot about wanting to see Harden try to move off the ball, but I don't trust Westbrook as a secondary guy to be on the ball. It all just kind of feeds into low IQ basketball, and I think that's, you know, despite his skills and his talents and his ability, you know, to put a team on his back, kind of, and take him to 46, 47 wins, you know, I respect Russell Westbrook, but, yeah, like I said, it's just low IQ basketball. I don't think that's what we need in Houston, especially given that since Chris Paul has come to Houston, I think we've seen a lot of high IQ basketball. And I think that one of Chris Paul's redeeming qualities, even as he does age and even as his like athleticism declines and all of that, is the fact that he does play high IQ basketball and he knows how to maximize what is on the court.
Yeah, the fit is a little odd at first glance. Now, in a weird way, even though he's 6'3", he actually is a good rebounder. We all know because of the triple-double chase, and the Rockets had issues on that end. But overall, in terms of his usage, that's where I have a tough time seeing it work, especially with Harden as dominant as he's been the last 2 years. The only reason why I don't dismiss it offhand, Roosh, is how tight we know that relationship to be between James Harden and Russell Westbrook. And who knows, of course, they played together in Oklahoma City, had a lot of success. Maybe there's a way that Harden can get through to him that others have not been able to. That's the only thing I can come up with. As we've seen with Kawhi and PG, I know it's a long shot, but relationships in this league are everything. I feel pretty confident in saying that Harden is as close with Russ as he is any player in the NBA. So while the vast majority of me knows that logically this is not probably a fit for Houston, there's a small part of me. I saw Karthik Prasad, Stanford KP on Twitter. He said 90% he's against it, but there's 10% of him that's very curious just based on the relationship and if you can harness Russell's strengths in the right way. Is there even a small part of you that if Harden gives him the benefit of the doubt, that Harden says, hey, this is my guy, I'm willing to go to bat for him, that would have you at least a little bit intrigued as to what the fit might be?
I think I can get with the 90-10 conditioned on Chris Paul not leaving. If it's a Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook swap, I would be totally against it for the reasons I mentioned. If Russell would become a potential third star, I could entertain the idea, 10% of me, because I agree. I do respect Westbrook. I mean, he's a hell of a ball player. He's a hooper, flat out, period, right?
Yep.
It's just that, you know, and this might sound a little dumb, but I mean, if that were to happen and the team did anything other than going to the NBA Finals, I might have to log off Twitter permanently. because, you know, if you think people hate the Houston Rockets already, then, oh boy, add Russell Westbrook and goodness. But yeah, I mean, they seem to have strong ties. There's some of it that is very intriguing, like you alluded to, like KP mentioned. Russell Westbrook's an amazing basketball player, so it's hard to just flat out say no, but I think it's one of those things where, for me, I'm listening to my gut, and my gut's telling me, like, man, you have Harden at 6'5", you'd have Russ at 6'3", and you'd have CP at 6'1", and those would be your main guys, and then there would be an enormous gap. And I think that one of the Rockets' biggest problems last season and one of their biggest problems right now is the lack of size, and I think we need to address that both on the wing and both, you know, in terms of a stretch big before looking at adding a guy with, like, Russell Westbrook. And that is factoring in the fact that, like, you know, if we add him, then I don't know what the cap would look like. I don't know what the deal would look like, but I would imagine that we'd be kind of strapped in terms of future moves and resources, right? You can maybe shed more light on that, but I think if we were to acquire Westbrook, like, that's what we'd be looking at, you know, is that as our core.
Yeah, so in theory, it's possible to have Westbrook, Harden, and Chris Paul, and you wouldn't be hard-capped. You could do Gordon, a Shumpert sign-and-trade with a bloated year-one salary, the same type of thing that we've been discussing for Andre Iguodala out in Memphis. You could route that to Oklahoma City or a third team, and basically you could send out Gordon, Shumpert, and minimums and make the math work. And you won't be hard capped because you'd be trading for a player that's already under contract in Russell Westbrook. It's not a sign and trade. However, where it gets tricky is that if you have every year $110 to $120 million in payroll just between Harden, Chris Paul, and Russell Westbrook, even though in theory, you know, you should have Clint Capella because you'll need a five, you've got these other minimums that you can put together, there's still ways that you can keep adding. However, Tillman Fertitta, while I think he gets a bad rap in some respects, I definitely would not expect him to just all of a sudden start giving Daryl Morey a blank check. And I do think even though technically you could make it work financially, it would give me a little bit of apprehension asking Tillman Fertitta every year to have $150+ million payroll, which effectively, if you have $120 million tied up just between three players, that's the road you would be going down. So maybe if Tillman's willing to do it, you could make it work. But based on what we know thus far, and it's not just Tillman, it's most NBA owners, that's a massive request. And I do think, realistically, it would be a little bit prohibitive.
Yeah, and in that scenario, it's interesting because, you know, then you're really only losing Eric Gordon as far as a real rotational piece. And, you know, I mean, it's hard not to think about that quote-unquote big three of CP3, Russell, and Harden. But I just don't see, in terms of a basketball fit, I just don't see it. I don't know if that's the best way to match up with the new landscape of the Western Conference as well, especially given that the Clippers seem to be everyone's prohibitive favorite, and they, you know, they're featuring two guys who are 6'8", who operate on the wing. And so we would then be having Harden at 6'3", like I said, or I'm sorry, Harden at 6'5". Like I said, Westbrook at 6'3", and CP at 6'1". And I also, you know, Westbrook does have a tight relationship with Harden, but I have to think that CP3 would be against that. And I don't have any background for thinking that other than how they play and just kind of imagining them on the court together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Harden got criticized a lot by Jalen Rose in the playoffs for standing around when Chris Paul had the ball. And one of Westbrook's, I have some good friends from Oklahoma, so, you know, I kind of take my thoughts from them, and they love Westbrook. But one of the criticisms of Westbrook is he just kind of stands around when he doesn't have the ball. He's not, you know, an off-ball movement kind of guy. And what I would, me personally, like to see the Houston Rockets do in terms of offense going forward is to kind of reduce the ISO and mix in, you know, some off-ball screens, off-ball movement, stuff like that to maximize where CP is headed. And I think the addition of Russell Westbrook would kind of do the opposite of that and just pretty much marry you to the ISO and just have three guys that could kind of rotate doing it. But he's just such a bad shooter from distance. And, you know, Harden's had a reputation for turning the ball over a lot since D'Antoni's gotten here because Harden's had the ball a lot. I think the one guy who's been up there in turnovers with Harden over the, you know, past 3 or 4 years is going to be Westbrook. And I just don't see the basketball fit. I would like to be a little more patient if we were to go all in on adding a third star. And if that third star is going to be a guard, my sights would try to be set on Bradley Beal, instead of pulling the trigger on Russell Westbrook. And I don't know how feasible a Bradley Beal deal would be. I don't know what his availability is. I know Washington has an interim GM, so I'm not expecting him to be available at the moment. But, you know, they're going to be in retool mode, and so you never know what happens down the line closer to the All-Star break and the trade deadline and things of that sort.
We'll get back into the show momentarily, but for now I want to tell you guys about our friends and sponsors over at Gallery Furniture, where they're kicking off the summer with red-hot savings on select items during the Red Hot Summer Sale. Stop by any convenient Houston-area Gallery Furniture location at 6006 North Freeway, 7227 West Grand Parkway South, or 2411 Post Oak Boulevard to take advantage of 40 to 60% savings on Houston's best selection of solid wood, made-in-America furniture, name-brand mattresses, 100% real top-grain leather and upholstered living room styles, one-of-a-kind market samples, and so much more. Plus, you'll find Gallery Furniture's lowest prices ever on quality pieces for every room in your home, including sofas starting at $399, dining sets as low as $599, Sealy queen-size mattresses starting at $599, and more. Don't miss your chance to enjoy these incredible summer savings at Gallery Furniture. And as always, when you shop Gallery Furniture today, you can have your quality purchases delivered straight to your Houston area home within hours when you choose same-day delivery. You can also visit them at galleryfurniture.com. Continuing our discussion with Roosh Williams, this is Locked on Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We're talking on Sunday, July 7th, as the second week of NBA free agency gets rolling. Before we talk about the Rockets, their needs, their specific targets, I want to circle back to the last 2 days, the bombshell of not just Kawhi Leonard joining the LA Clippers, but also Paul George. Roosh, we've been texting, DMing, somewhat in fear of the Kawhi to the Lakers possibility the last couple of weeks, and of course talking about how the Rockets could match up with that super team. While this is not as ideal, certainly, as Kawhi staying out east with the Raptors, certainly the Clippers with Kawhi, PG, they keep the big three of Rockets, Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell. They'll be good, and so will the Lakers with LeBron and AD. But I feel at least some relief that while these teams are good on paper, it doesn't feel overwhelming. In terms of the NBA balance of power, certainly the LA teams are both contenders. They're better, but it doesn't feel like there's a team going into the year that all of a sudden you know from a talent perspective is better than the Rockets. Is that fair? Is that kind of how you look at it? Is there at least some relief from knowing that he doesn't go to the Lakers?
In my opinion, yes, absolutely. Had he gone to the Lakers, I think they would have, I still think they would have had a little bit of trouble filling out the roster, but I think they would have had enough guys to where their big three could carry them. Mm-hmm. And they would have had an incredibly versatile big three. But Kawhi going to the Clippers, you know, it makes the Clippers, and Paul George, of course, makes the Clippers very strong. And I think the Lakers are still pretty strong. They added some good names. But what I like about it is that both teams have, in my opinion, both teams have very apparent weaknesses. And that doesn't mean that those weaknesses are going to be, you know, gaping holes that they can't overcome or gaping holes that reduce them, their status as contenders. But the Rockets built a team to take on the Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant, a.k.a. one of the best dynasties in basketball history, period, right? Probably a top five dynasty ever, if not higher. And that team, in my opinion, had no weaknesses at all. You know, there was really, the only weakness you could possibly point to was depth, but they did a great job of covering that up in the playoffs, and it just was what it was. But with the Lakers and the Clippers, as constructed, you know, you might have seen me talking about this on Twitter, the Clippers, they have no size, you know? Now, they might be able to play kind of like a modern version of small ball, because, you know, they got Paul George and Kawhi, 6'8", 6'9", both long on the wings. They've got Montrezl Harrell, also about 6'8", 6'9", you know, who plays above the rim with a lot of energy. But that's it, you know, and I think they've got Mo Harkless as well, who's more of a bench guy. But they have no one that can get vertical with Capella. Obviously, Montrez can, but in terms of Capella's length and overall height, those extra 2 or 3 inches plus his added wingspan makes a large difference, especially, you know, in terms of contesting at the rim, in terms of throwing alley-oops, you know, our bread-and-butter lob play, keeping loose balls alive, things like that. They do have Zubats. He's the kind of big, he's more of like a flat-footed kind of big. Mm. And from what I saw when him and Capella matched up, Zubac had one. There was like a quarter with the Lakers when he was playing with the Lakers earlier in the season where he gave Capella some trouble. But with the Clippers, once we had our real team, I mean, Capella just dominated him because he's kind of like the same philosophy with Jokic, except he's much less talented, obviously. But he just doesn't get up. You know, he's flat-footed. So when he steps forward, when dribble penetration occurs and Zubac steps forward to stop the dribble penetration, they have no answer for the lob to Capela. And then that begins scrambling their entire defense, because now the weak side guy guarding the three-point shooter has to rotate over, and then, you know, all of a sudden Harden has options. You can either flip it up to the lob, you whip it to the corner to PJ, and you got guys closing out, scrambling, and the ball starts moving. So I think that is our advantage. I mean, obviously the Clippers look pretty scary with Paul George, Kawhi, Pat Beverly. They have, all of them can shoot. I mean, Paul George has become a 39-40% three-point shooter. Kawhi is a pull-up three-point shooter. Lou Williams can shoot threes, obviously. Beverly's even been like a 38-40% guy recently. Landry Shamet is a sniper. So they've got versatility, they've got shooters, but they don't have size, in my opinion, and they also, in my opinion, don't have ball handling, an adequate amount of ball handling. All their guys, like Paul George, Kawhi, Lou, those are probably going to be their three guys who are best with the ball, and none of them are, you know, it's a new NBA. You don't need, like, a true point guard, but in terms of pure dribble penetration, I mean, Lou Williams pretty much operates on the pick and roll, and then Kawhi and Paul George operate kind of off the wing. You dump it to them on the block, and they go to work. But I could see them having some trouble on offense for those reasons. And I could just see us, the Rockets, being able to take advantage of some of their weaknesses, especially given that the Rockets have continuity and chemistry. They know who they are. They know their identity. So I think that'll be a good matchup. As for the Lakers, I think the Lakers are interesting. They are very forward heavy, maybe in like a very sluggish way. You know, they've got LeBron, they've got AD, but at this point in his career, LeBron kind of stands around a lot if he doesn't have the ball. And on defense as well. Boogie Cousins coming off an Achilles, coming off the quad. You know, I think he's still going to be an effective player, but he's not going to be the same Boogie, in my opinion. And he's obviously, in my opinion, he's expecting to start. And so you're going to have Boogie and AD, which we've seen that works. But then you add in the fact that Boogie's not the same Boogie as when that pairing was successful. And then you also add in the fact that LeBron's going to be on the court with them. And all of a sudden, I see a lot of standing around, you know, a slow kind of moving offense, kind of sluggish, poor rotations on defense out of those two guys that you can't just magically mask with Anthony Davis every time. And I think the biggest glaring hole with them is guard play. They have very weak guard play as constructed. They've got Danny Green's their best guard. And Danny Green, you know, he's a good role player to have, of course, but if he's your best guard, I think that might be trouble. Rondo, Danny Green, Alex Caruso, who I think has some game, and I think he'll surprise some folks, but I mean, I don't think he's an elite guard. And then Troy Daniels, and I think that's their guard rotation. So pretty small. You know, Daniels is a niche shooter, pretty much what he's going to do, even in his best seasons in Phoenix, you know, putting up like 8 or 9 points. Danny Green, he's a catch and shoot guy. He's not going to break down anyone off the dribble. Rondo's not the same Rondo as he was when he was, you know, an elite point guard. And he's also declined defensively as well, too. So given all that, and then you contrast it to the Rockets with the backcourt of James Harden and Chris Paul, I think there's definitely an advantage. And I think Capela, this might be a naive way to look at it, but I think that the Rockets' advantage is the backcourt overwhelmingly. The Lakers' advantage is their front court overwhelmingly. But I think the Rockets' ancillary piece in Capela is much better than any guard that the Lakers have to offset their weakness. And that might not play out in a basketball manner to be an advantage the way that I'm depicting it, but you just got to think. I mean, I feel like we're more complete and they're more top heavy, and we'll see how that pans out. But they definitely have weaknesses as well, and they definitely have ball handling weaknesses after LeBron. I mean, you know, they've got Rondo, but you know, he's not the same Rondo, and they don't have shooting either. You know, they've got Troy Daniels, who can shoot, niche kind of guy, like I said. They've got Danny Green, great shooter, and then after that, KCP and Kuzma both shot, I think KCP shot 433s last season, and I think Kuzma shot about 423. And Kuzma was a 30.5%, if I'm not mistaken, from three. KCP was about 34.7%. So, I mean, you see those guys on huge volume, not being great shooters. You know, LeBron can shoot. I wouldn't call him a shooter. Of course he can shoot, though. I don't know how Anthony Davis has looked from three, but if memory serves correctly, you know, average at best. Boogie has catch and shoot capability. I don't know. I just don't think they have the type of shooting that you'd be looking for in a typical LeBron team outside of a couple of guys who are really just catch and shoot guys. So I think they have some weaknesses. And then obviously, if LeBron gets hurt, I think they're in trouble. And a groin is a very, groin injuries are the type of thing that can nag you and that can get worse as you get older. And he is getting older. He's going to be 35, I believe, at the end of the year. So we'll see. I mean, I don't think there's a clear cut favorite out of, you know, the new construction of the LA team. So I think that it bodes well for the Rockets. I think if we add a couple pieces, we can absolutely compete and be a contender.
Two other West teams of note very quickly. The Oklahoma City Thunder, I think a lot of people have overlooked them because certainly it was tough to see them being a true championship contender. However, I think the breakup of that team, Paul George out, and it sounds like whether it's Houston or more likely somewhere else, maybe Miami with Russell Westbrook, they would go into somewhat rebuilding mode. They have all those draft picks from the Clippers. That's a big deal because not only are they consistently a playoff team in the West, and maybe they could have had a continuity jump this year, the second or third, actually, of the Russell Westbrook, Paul George partnership, maybe like the second year of Dwight Howard and James Harden a few years back when the Rockets went to mid-50s in wins and got to the Western Conference Finals, the two seed. You could have had that happen, but also they were just a terrible matchup for the Rockets. They lost 3 of 4 last year, the size, the length, the physicality, that's no more. So I think not having them in the Western Conference playoff mix, that's a positive. Even though they're not a team that people thought could actually win the West, I do think that's a slight bump for the Rockets. And then the other thing that's interesting that I want to get your take on, Roosh, the Utah Jazz. Clearly, they've gotten better. They've gotten a lot of hype. However, I do think we need to pump the brakes just a little bit. I like the moves they've made. Certainly, Mike Conley, they are better. But what I'm seeing in terms of a lot of the reaction, you see folks that are looking at their increased playmaking and shooting, and of course that's what they were deficient in the last 2 years against the Rockets when they lost 8 of 10 playoff games and were kicked out by the Rockets in 5 both times. I understand that, and so they've gotten better at their weaknesses. But the guys they sent out, Rubio, Crowder, Favors, that was a big part of their defensive identity. Now they are keeping Rudy Gobert, so they're not going to suddenly become a bad defensive team. I'm not saying anything like that. But I don't think it's as simple as saying the Jazz are going to be the exact same team they were the last 2 years, as dominant as they were defensively, but now you add the shooting, and so they're a juggernaut. I think, all in all, they've become better, but I don't think it's quite the open and shut case for a huge jump that a lot of folks on NBA Twitter, judging by their early reactions, seem to think. Do you see where I'm coming from on that?
Yes, for sure. You know, I think that they made some solid moves, and I've tweeted about how I think they're going to be a better team. But when you zoom out, losing Favors for, I believe it's Bogdanovich, and then, you know, swapping Rubio basically for Conley, and then I think they, added Jeff Green, Ed Davis, and Emmanuel Mudiay.
Yes.
Those are their kind of main moves. And they lose Crowder, they lose Korver, who didn't really play much, but,
right,
you know, a shooter. And then they lose Favors and perhaps one more that I'm missing. But yeah, so I think they, in terms of how they match up with us, they address the shooting, but Favors was a big part of what they were able to do. They kind of had the size to overwhelm us and to give us some problems in that respect, and to use that size, use that physicality, beat us on the glass. You know, if Rudy wasn't out there, they could maybe play small ball five with Favors at the five.
Yep.
So I think there is definitely going to be like a switch in how they play, and it's just going to be a matter of how they adjust to it. I think their defensive identity is reduced. We'll see if it's going to be a scheme thing with Quinn Snyder's, you know, defense, or if the personnel really was very instrumental. I don't think one thing I do think was to our advantage. Harden has historically just owned Ricky Rubio, and I was excited. I was actually excited that Ricky Rubio was there, was healthy this past season instead of not being available, because I thought that, I just kind of think that he doesn't really match up well with us, and I think he's the kind of guy that you can let Ricky Rubio score 16, 18, 20 points, because he's going to do it on, it's not going to be an efficient 16 to 20 points, and he's going to have to hit some kind of little tough fadeaway shots when he gets in the lane, and you can live with that. But the other thing not to overlook, I will say, is Royce O'Neal has given us serious problems, and Royce O'Neal's still there, and also Dante Exum.
Good point.
Dante Exum was not healthy last season, and Dante Exum gave James Harden some problems, so they could shore up some of what they lost defensively if they can get contributions from Dante Exum and if Royce O'Neal continues to get better. I'm not really worried about Emmanuel Mudiay. I think it's better than Raul Neto. I don't think he's necessarily a difference maker. And we've seen Jeff Green bounce around the league. I don't really think he's been a material difference maker in any on any team he's ever been on. So I'm not really too worried about Jeff Green. He'll probably have that regular season game or two where, you know, Jeff Green scores 25 on us somehow and it's just kills you. But I don't think Jeff Green, you know, is going to put them over the top. So all in all, I think they lose some, you know, and Crowder was actually another guy. Crowder's kind of my general rule of thumb with Jay Crowder is if Jay Crowder's on your team, you are not going to win a championship. And I think so far that's been true. He's one of those guys that plays kind of like a bigger Patrick Beverley. Mm. He plays hard nosed. He's tough. He'll probably a fan favorite of whatever franchise he's with. But at the end of the day, you know, he's going to hit some big threes. He's going to hit some big threes and kick his leg out and get the and one. But when you kind of zoom out and look at it, he's going to shoot like 32% from three. He's going to take bad shots, that kind of thing. So I think the Jazz are interesting. I don't know if they're not a favorite in terms of a contender for me, but I think they're definitely going to be a top 4-5 team. But that's where they've been also recently. So I don't know how much of it's going to be a lateral move and how much of it's going to be a positive move. But I do think it's good for them to get some increased shooting because Conley can shoot, Bogdanovich can shoot. They've already got Ingles, so they kind of can maybe be a little more versatile and spread themselves out instead of being stuck to that, you know, grinded out kind of identity. So we'll see.
We'll finish up our show in just a few moments, but for now I want to tell you guys a little bit about our friends and partners over at Twillery. Because with Twillery, smart casual just got smarter and cheaper. Twillery is built on a century-old family manufacturing business. They make millions of shirts a year for leading brands, and they leverage those contacts and their team's technical know-how to keep costs down while maintaining high standards in quality and craftsmanship. Their view is that shirts shouldn't wrinkle, itch, or sweat. Because it's 2019, these guys know that shirts are a commodity, and they make stocking up your closet as simple as restocking beer in your fridge. Easy, affordable, and the perfect fit. Guaranteed. They offer non-iron, untuckable, and performance stretch shirts, and with free shipping and returns, you can try on some Twills risk-free. After all, feeling is believing. Twillery brings performance work shirts to the next level with four-way stretch material that shuts down wrinkles, stops sweat, and keeps you looking and feeling cool. Best of all, it's the top value in smart workwear. With the Shop and Bundle model, you all have access to shirts that competitors are selling for $100 and up, for as low as $55 per shirt. Grab yourself some today at Twillery.com/LockedOn and use the promo code LockedOn for $25 off. They've even got a limited time special where you can enjoy a free set of bottle opener collar stays with your purchase. That's all from our friends over at Twillery, who you can visit at Twillery.com/LockedOn. That's Twillory. And don't forget to use that promo code LockedOn for an extra $25 off on anything in their complete line of apparel. All right, final thoughts with Roosh Williams on this Sunday, July 7th show. This is Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. In this third and final segment, we'll turn our attention to free agency entering its second week. The Rockets in week one, of course, they swung and missed on Jimmy Butler, but they did bring back the band to some degree. Gerald Green, Daniel House, Austin Rivers, all back in the fold, but they still need, be it by free agency, they could in theory, use their non-taxpayer mid-level exception, although it's unclear who's really out there, and their biannual and hard cap themselves, or they could give out a lot of minimums and then turn to the trade market, perhaps using Iman Shumpert's bird rights and a sign-and-trade. Andre Iguodala is one rumored possibility. Clearly, though, the Rockets, week one was about bringing back their guys. Week two, they need to fortify their depth. They need to bring in pieces. To me, the key needs backup forward and a backup center. You need an innate replacement, and you probably need someone else at the three and four spots, even if it's something that lets you play small. We know Mike D'Antoni is not afraid of that, so that's where Andre Iguodala could fit in, even though he's not a prototypical backup four, to fill some of those minutes when PJ Tucker is out. Roosh, the name I want to start with, Tim McMahon reported as we're recording this that the Rockets have interest in Tyson Chandler. He spent some time with the Lakers last year. I know you're out in L.A. Tyson's been around for a long time. He has history with CP3 in New Orleans from a decade ago, but he's going to turn 37 in October. Just curious what you saw from Chandler the last couple of years and if you see him as a fit potentially for that backup center spot as the Rockets enter week two and basically the bargain hunting portion of free agency.
Yeah, so last season, you know, I think I'm looking at it now. He played 16 minutes per game with the Lakers. He played 13 minutes per game with the Suns. I mean, he's got the relationship with CP3. He's got the on-paper fit of, you know, just being a tall, long guy who's known for catching alley-oops, which I'm sure at this point maybe isn't the case as it used to be. I'm just not high on the idea of, you know, a 36, 37-year-old guy and relying on him for anything other than, you know, 13 to 14 minutes a game max. And, you know, he probably has to be load managed as well. But at this point, I also don't think the Rockets really have any other options. Maybe Cheick Diallo is a name I've seen being floated around. Obviously, JaMychal Green would be the ideal guy to get, but it doesn't look like that's going to be happening. I haven't heard anything on that front. And frankly, I haven't heard any news about JaMychal Green, period. So that's kind of odd to me. I'm not sure if this is true, but I think I read that the Clippers might have the room exception still available.
I believe
they do.
The
case. Yeah, if that's the case, I'd expect him to get that. Which, feeding into our previous discussion, that would not be good in terms of how the Rockets match up with the Clippers. But, yeah, I mean, I would entertain Tyson Chandler. I think that the Rockets need size. I think the thing that's killed the Rockets is the lack of size. And I think having a guy who has that chemistry with CP3 that can kind of run on the bench unit, you know, he gets active on the glass in terms of tap outs and stuff like that. I don't know how much juice he's got left in the tank at this age is the problem. But, you know, like I said, I think the market's pretty much thinned out. Any guy that you could have hoped to get, even Ekpe Udo, who is not someone I'm very high on, but someone who I'd be open to if that's what it was. Even he just signed, I think, in China. So, yeah. Just for sheer lack of resources, I think that's kind of what the Rockets have to do. Personally, I think I'm in the minority here on this one, but if there's no clear way to upgrade without attaching picks, you know, I'd be interested in Andre Iguodala if we could swap Shump for him. I'd be okay with that. Attach a pick, maybe make it happen. But if that doesn't happen, instead of trying to hard cap and, you know, I don't want to call it a panic move because I don't think that'd be correct, but instead of kind of going all in on your resources before the season starts, I think I'm in the minority in thinking that Shump could actually be a backup three, at least for a while. He was pretty bad when the Rockets picked him up, but I think he showed his worth in games 3, 4, and 5 against the Warriors. You know, he showed that, like, when the lights are on, he can actually play, right? Mm-hmm. He's not 6'7", he's not 6'8", he's not going to be like a lockdown defender, but he does give you some smarts and IQ on the defensive end, and a guy who's been there and done that and knows how to do it. He is still pretty athletic. We know he can be a 36% three-point shooter in that area. He wasn't with the Rockets. But again, if you go back and look at games 3, 4, and 5 against the Warriors, he really came up big. And I just think that if he had a full training camp with the Rockets, with the rotation set, you know, because I think when the Rockets acquired him, it was kind of unclear. I don't think Daniel House was back yet. And I think the Rockets probably had some injuries. I can't exactly remember, but I think Capella might have been out.
Yep.
And so I think if he was able to kind of get a fresh start from day one with the real roster and everyone's roles being defined, I'd be okay with bringing Shum back and then playing the buyout market, seeing who becomes available, what stars may or may not get disgruntled, you know, things of that sort. I think if we roll in with the lineup of our starting five from last year, except Daniel House, so Capella at the 5, Tucker at the 4, House at the 3, Harden, CP3. The backup center spot has a question mark at the moment. I think we might be able to get by with Gary Clark as a backup 4 for spot minutes as of now. He looked pretty bad. I ran back some highlights last night of the summer league game, and I thought he looked pretty bad. But I'm hoping that we can get something out of him because we're going to need it as currently constructed. And then you mix in Shumpert and Gerald Green at the backup 3, maybe even go small ball and run them both, you know, Shumpert and Green, maybe Shump at the 4, quote unquote. And then Eric Gordon at the backup 2 and then Rivers. So I think we can get by with it. I don't think it's quite what it was last season when you had Carmelo and Hartenstein out there playing minutes, and just like a revolving door of G League guys trying to earn contracts. I don't think it's quite the same. So I wouldn't really be opposed to going that route because I think some guys are going to become available and I think there's going to be some talent, and it would be a shame if the Rockets went all in and then were, you know, went all in on a less optimal option and then were kind of preventing themselves from being able to make those other moves. Because I know Rockets fans are tired of relying on the buyout market, as am I. But, you know, like I said, it's not the same as last season. We have the top 7 of the rotation intact, and we just kind of need to fill some holes instead of searching for everything. And I also think that Daniel House is going to take a jump this season, you know, coming into training camp. I think he's expecting to start. His size will give us some help. His ability to create will give the Rockets some help. And another name, I think that there's been some rumors about Kenneth Faried not being happy with Mike D'Antoni and his situation, but he's also not on any team. So, I wouldn't be opposed to bringing Faried back, at least for now.
And if you re-sign Shumpert, even if you ultimately do it to deal him later, there's still value in that as well. You can have him as a backup three, a backup four, because we know with Mike D'Antoni, they'll go small a lot. I think a lot of Rockets fans would be down on that move because it feels like more of the same, but you would still have the optionality, especially if you get him on, say, a bloated one-year deal, of using him as filler for, say, a Bradley Beal at the deadline or someone else that may become available, another disgruntled star, as you put it. So when I say the Shumpert path, yeah, you could deal him for an Iguodala now. We'll see what shakes free out of Memphis. That deal just became official today. But if that doesn't happen, beyond just Shumpert, and you could see a case for him having value. He was good for several games in that Golden State series. But also, it's important to remember for fans that it's not just Shumpert the player. You would also have him as a potential salary filler role down the road. So that's more value. And it sounds like, I think we're on the same page. There's probably, given the landscape of the free agency market right now, other than probably Jermichael Green, even Marcus Morris is off the board now to San Antonio. I mentioned him on Saturday's show as a target. Other than Jermichael Green, there's probably more value to the Shumpert path being trading him now for Iguodala or someone else or keeping him than there is to hard capping yourself and limiting your flexibility later. Roosh, the other issue with free agency that I want to get to, we touched on Tyson Chandler earlier. You mentioned Summer League. Hartenstein in the opener, the Rockets lost by 32. I'm not so surprised that they lost because, look, Summer League's about young prospects. The Rockets have not had a first-round pick in some time, so other teams are going to be more top-heavy. I don't expect them to win most of these games. But even though Hartenstein had 20-13, it was pretty underwhelming. He was out there the vast majority of the game when the Rockets were having a lot of breakdowns, especially defensively. I didn't like how easily he was blown by in the perimeter. Hartenstein's not a quintessential big from a toughness perspective, so if he's going to play, he probably needs to be one of those versatile stretch bigs that can play on the perimeter, hit some threes, but also defensively hold his own on switches. And even though it's one game, the Rockets play again tonight, hopefully he'll look better. But I just did not see much from Hartenstein that would give me confidence to say, hey, this can be the backup center in Houston. To me, what limited we saw last night from Hartenstein seems to suggest even more strongly that the Rockets need to go out and, whether it's Tyson Chandler or someone else, go out and get a proven veteran backup five like they had Nene from a year ago. Is that how you saw it?
Yeah, so I did not watch the game, but what I did is I ran back the condensed game highlights. You know, it's like a 9-10 minute clip. And the funny thing is, Huttat, so you know, I think that I'm not high on Isaiah Hartenstein. I don't expect him to be a contributing player on a winning team this season. I don't even know if he's an NBA player down the road. I just don't think his footwork is there for being a big. And like you said, combined with the lack of size and toughness, I just don't think that that's going to really get you far in the NBA. He's kind of like a poor man's Jake Lehman or Miles Leonard kind of player, and those guys aren't very good to begin with. So, but what I did is I ran back the condensed game highlights, and so those don't usually tell you the whole story, but what I found interesting was that in most of those clips, I probably saw Isaiah Hartenstein get, you know, in an ISO situation, get switched onto and shot over or blown by for a made basket, going strictly off my memory, probably at least 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
And probably more than that. So he looked pretty bad. I mean, he looked really bad. He was being shot over with ease. Every time he got switched onto a perimeter player, he'd have to give a cushion because he doesn't have the foot speed or the lateral quickness. And, you know, they'd either shoot a three right over him, or if he took a step forward, they were going by, and he's very clumsy, so he usually fouls when people go to the basket, and it resulted in a couple and ones or just easy layups. So I don't think Isaiah Hartenstein is going to be, I don't think Rockets fans should expect him to be in the rotation or should put any faith or stock in him. So I agree with you. I think it kind of underscores the necessity of a backup five for the Rockets because it's not going to be Hartenstein.
Good stuff. Folks, he is Roosh Williams. You can follow him on Twitter at Roosh Williams. Roosh, thanks so much for the time. Look forward to having you on again.
Sounds good, man. Thanks as always.
So I think that will do it for today's show on Sunday, July 7th here at Locked On Rockets. If you want more content before our next episode, there are, of course, many ways that you can get that. First and foremost is Twitter, where I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Roosh is on there, at Roosh Williams, and the show is on there, at Locked on Rockets. Beyond that, we've got a website, LockedOnRockets.com, Facebook account at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways that you can access prior episodes, or you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, those types of things. Before we go, I do want to once again thank and acknowledge our great sponsors, and keep in mind that if you support these guys, you're also helping us grow here at Locked on Rockets as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. One of those sponsors, of course, is Gallery Furniture, where the Red Hot Summer Sale is now in full swing. Visit any Houston area Gallery Furniture location or go to galleryfurniture.com to take advantage of all the specials. You can also support our friends over at Twillery, where if you go to twillery.com/lockedon, you can use the promo code LOCKEDON for $25 off on their complete line of apparel. And in addition to supporting our sponsors, please remember that to get this show every day, you can and should subscribe to Locked on Rockets on Himalaya's new podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked on Rockets. Of course, you can also listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And I encourage you to do so and to leave 5-star reviews wherever you can. And when you get in your car or you go to the gym, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked on Rockets and listen to our most recent episodes that way as well. Once again, I'm Ben Dubose. Thanks to all of you for listening. And please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked on Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.